tuned in to the Community Cats Podcast. Ready? Let's go.
Welcome to the Community Cats Podcast. I am your host, Stacey LeBaron. I've been involved helping homeless cats for over 30 years with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. The goal of this podcast is to expose you to amazing people who are improving the lives of cats. I hope these interviews will help you learn how you can turn your passion for cats into action. And today we are speaking with Vicki Halls. Vicki is head of unowned cats at International Cat Care in the United Kingdom, working specifically on projects relating to the welfare of unowned cats throughout the world. Vicki has worked with cats for over 36 years. She's a registered veterinary nurse and clinical animal behaviorist, spending over 25 years seeing cat behavior cases on veterinary referral. Vicki has lectured all over the world on cat behavior to veterinary and lay audiences and now speaks on cat population management and cat-friendly homing. Vicki is also a qualified and registered person-centered counselor. Vicki is the author of 7 best-selling books on cats for the general public, several peer-reviewed papers for scientific journals, and co-author of veterinary textbooks and published guidelines. Vicki, I'd like to welcome you to the show.
Thank you, Stacey. It's great to be here.
I can't believe it's taken us this long to get to know each other, because when we have a conversation, it's like, oh, we've both been in the same worlds to a certain degree. But before we dive into everything, you know, how'd you get to be so passionate about cats?
Oh, gosh. Well, I guess I'm not going to go back to childhood, so don't go that far back. Always loved cats. Didn't have one as a child. Borrowed one from my next door neighbour. Learned so much, but actually started, like so many other people in the sector, started volunteering for a local rescue organisation. And of course, I mean, I had a full-time job I was in, sort of management, completely unrelated. And of course, you get the bug, don't you? But on a rather sad note to start with, one of the first jobs I had when I was given an actual salaried position, it was at a time in British history where we were suffering from really bad overpopulation. One of the jobs I had to do was to end life of cats because there were too many. And I remember thinking at the time, why am I doing this? How can a cat lover do this? And I had terrible conflict in my mind. Do I walk away and just hide in a room and get over it? Or do I keep asking why till I annoy people? And it's that pursuit of why. I'm still here. And I think my ultimate goal in life is to make sure that nobody has to go through what I went through 30 odd years ago. And that's what really cat population management and doing this right is all about. We don't want to have to end the life of animals.
I'm sorry you had to go through that. I have been blessed. I was raised in an environment where that was not an option. So it was not even I didn't have to ask the question of why. It was just not something that we did when we started the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. That was just not a solution in our mind. However, we knew of other organizations that did that. And so we had to ask that why, going above and beyond that, understanding more of what was going on outside of our silo to understand that the environment that we were brought in up in, or I was, early age spay neuter before adoption, trap neuter return, monitored feeding stations and monitored colonies. We were doing this all in the 90s. And I blindly felt like, oh, everyone else is doing this too. And I had to realize that was not the case. And you and I both have become over the years strategic thinkers. And we've both had moments where we've both had to ask why, or I also say I've seen things that I never want to see again, and I don't want anyone else to have to see those situations again with kittens in dumpsters, houses with too many cats, and people not being able to take care of them and loving those cats. Is there a point in your background where you felt like you moved from individual hands-on caretaking of cats to more of a strategy-oriented person?
I think it was very early on because of my background. I think the why led me to think, well, this is a symptom, a consequence of something. How can I track this back to see where this actually went wrong? You know, how come this cat is here and somebody is saying there is nowhere for this cat to go, so we have to end this cat's life. And by looking at that, I mean, obviously it took me into a different sphere educationally. I qualified to be a veterinary nurse. I went into clinical behavior, as you mentioned earlier. I ran a veterinary practice and then ended up, after a period of years, working with international cat care. And it was all about really understanding, I knew the symptoms, I knew what the symptoms were, and they were very difficult, they were very distressing. And as you say, sometimes you see things you'd rather you hadn't seen. And that's all about that sort of rescue emergency situation where you're mopping up and addressing symptoms. And it soon became clear to me that there has to be a root cause here somewhere. There has to be a problem with a root cause. And of course, you pursue that and you realize that there are fundamental similarities all around the world with the problem. The problem is overpopulation. The nuance and the variety and diversity that exists in the actual root causes of the problem, particularly when you're working globally and you're seeing the different ways it manifests in different countries, that's when it started to get really complicated. And that's when it challenges your strategic brain to try and navigate through that, to see, okay, if we're going to deal with the root causes rather than just address symptoms, if you just address symptoms, you know this, Stacey, you're destined to do that forever. You've got to start looking at why is this happening and how can we stop it from happening. It does get complicated. And if it's complicated for me to do it, if that's my entire focus in life, it's going to be very complicated for other people as well, potentially.
So is trap, neuter, return a root cause solution, or is it a reaction, or is it a symptom as you would define it?
TNR for me is addressing a symptom, and the symptom being the overpopulation. But also, if you view TNR as more holistically, as part of a series of interconnected interventions for cat population management, that's working at root cause level for me. So it can be, if you're, you know, I mean, there's thousands of people all over the world seeing the problem in front of them, raising funds, neutering the dozen cats in front of them, and doing a fantastic job for that dozen cats. But suddenly they're realizing there's more and more cats. It's like a hole in my bucket, you know. you try and fix it, but more come. But TNR done strategically as part of a bigger sort of program of cat population management is powerful if you are able to do it.
Before we dive into what you have classified as a jigsaw puzzle, I want to ask you to clearly define for our listeners, what is root cause?
The root cause of, and we're talking about cat overpopulation here, because invariably when you're looking at what is the problem in my area, the problem may be too many cats in shelters, not enough people to adopt cats, too many cats abandoned on the street, too many cats in some parts of the world free roaming and actively breeding on the streets. So it could be a mixture of all those things. And therefore, depending on where you are in the world, the root causes could be anything from actively feeding cats that you don't own, could be one of them, to not enough people neutering their pet cats, to limited veterinary capacity to neuter those cats, the cost of neutering, the cost of living causing pets to be abandoned, governments making decisions to deal with the overpopulation of cats by taking them off the streets and putting them in shelters with no hope of those cats ever finding pet homes. So there's a whole suite of root causes that underlie the problem of overpopulation. And I guess the role of people who are living in their own community experiencing problems is to identify the problems that they are experiencing locally, to work with all the stakeholders in the community and have these conversations. And then over a period of time, you can then work out, well, it looks like the biggest problem is people are abandoning their pets because they're not having them neutered and their reproductive behaviors are a problem or whatever. You've got to ask those questions first. Otherwise, you make assumptions. And if you make assumptions, then you're wrong. You're going to tackle a root cause that isn't actually a root cause, so it won't fix the problem.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, understanding the needs of the community, understanding what others are doing in the community, and putting pieces together. So the jigsaw puzzle. So let's talk about this jigsaw puzzle of yours and share the story of how this all came about and what should our listeners be looking for with it?
Okay. Well, just as I've tried to explain there, it's actually quite a complicated thing. If you've been working very much in a particular sector of this community of people who work with unknown cats, you might work in a shelter, you might be an individual person that does some rescue or does some TNR or whatever. It's very difficult to stand back and really appreciate the bigger picture. And again, it's difficult really to articulate because it's so complicated, the idea of symptoms, problems, and root causes. So one thing we learned fairly quickly was that cat population management is a series of things. It's not just one thing. It's a series of things. And so the jigsaw puzzle idea, this is a bit left field, but the jigsaw puzzle idea came from the fact that myself and women of a certain age in the UK love to do jigsaw puzzles. So we were just talking about it and I said, it's a bit like a jigsaw puzzle. Of course, as soon as I said that, we all started thinking, it's a jigsaw puzzle, that's it. So what we actually did to start with is we produced a jigsaw puzzle, I'm just looking at it now actually, with only four pieces in, and that's a vast oversimplification. But we thought it's a start. And our four pieces of the jigsaw puzzle show the responsibilities of different stakeholders in the cat population management program. It's a collaboration. You have to do it. You have to work with other people, both within your specific sector and other stakeholders as well. We didn't include local or national government in this. There's a lot of stakeholders we missed out. We were just trying to make a point with these key four stakeholders. And we chose pet owners, TNR groups, veterinary clinics, and homing organizations as an example of four stakeholders that need to work together. And so we illustrated it with pretty colors as in the shape of a cat's head, a very sort of simple cat's head icon. And we even made sure that the left ear tip was showing just to show that it's a managed. Do you ear tip in the US routinely, or are you more a tattoo? It's predominantly ear tip, is it?
We're ear tips. Yeah. We're mainly left ear tips.
Yes.
And some parts on the West Coast tip on the right ear.
Okay. So this is very much not a West Coast thing. So left ear is a tip. And for pet owners, for example, we said, you have a responsibility. We all have a responsibility. We all play our role. And pet owners, we ask that you neuter your pets pre-pubertally. So you neuter them before they become sexually active. And I think if you ask the average owner, when do you think your kitten could potentially get pregnant or get another cat pregnant if they're a boy? I think they'd probably say, oh, not until they're grown up. You know, 1-2 years or whatever. But of course, we know in some parts of the world, a kitten can be as young as 4 months and become pregnant. So what we say is, if you can neuter your cat at 4 months of age or younger. And also for those people who are suffering personal crises, be they financial or any other type of crisis, and their thought is to abandon their pet, we're saying to them, think about this, seek help before you get to that stage. And likewise, we would say to homing organizations, be prepared to reach out to your community and be amenable to having those conversations of people who say, I'm in crisis. I cannot think of anything else to do apart from abandon my cat. And consider potential solutions for people so they don't have to resort to that. And of course, microchipping. In many countries, it's mandatory. It's a legal requirement, not in others. But microchipping and a really good, robust database that's up to date ensures that you maintain that connection with your cat and you show that you are responsible for that cat. Another section is the TNR groups, and that's all about working strategically, working with the funding you've got and the veterinary capacity you've got. Sometimes we talk to people about, if you're going to do TNR, front load it, do loads and loads of cats up front, you want 75% up front. And immediately people's attitudes is, quite rightly, I can't possibly do that. That sounds overwhelming. There's just too many. But what we're saying is, of course, it's too many if you look at your entire population. Do it colony by colony, street by street, or whatever, neighborhood by neighborhood. And that way, close that colony and then move on to the next one. But you hit the numbers high at the beginning and just go back for the stragglers. And that seems to be one of the most effective ways to do this. And of course, you have to make sure you have your veterinary capacity there.
Love cats and want to make a bigger difference? Then don't miss the online cat conference happening January 25th and 26th. It's a fun and inspiring virtual event where cat lovers, volunteers, animal welfare and veterinary pros, advocates and experts come together to present new ideas and make big things happen for our feline friends. Since this conference is virtual, everyone can participate, no travel or cats that are required. Register before December 27th to snag your spot for just $50. You'll get access to two packed days of presentations, tips, and strategies to help cats. Save your virtual seat today at communitycatspodcast.com. Let's create a better world for every cat together. That's communitycatspodcast.com. We can't wait to see you there. Are you getting your message across to your entire community? Do they know what programs you offer and what they can do to help? Learn more about how to effectively market your organization or just sharpen your skills with a free self-paced marketing course, The Fundamentals of Marketing on Maddie's University. The course is designed to provide a basic understanding of marketing and provide you with templates and tools to elevate and improve your organization's brand, voice, and audience, and have fun while doing it. You'll receive a strategic marketing plan template to download free. Go to university.maddiesfund.org and search marketing to enroll now. This season, give a gift that celebrates your love for cats and makes a difference. The Community Cats Podcast Shop has everything you need to delight the cat lovers in your life. Cozy sweatshirts, stylish tote bags, fun mugs, adorable stickers, and much more. But these aren't just gifts. They're a way to give back. Every purchase supports programs and initiatives that help community cats and the people who care for them. So while you're spreading holiday cheer, you're also making a real impact for cats in need. Whether you're shopping for a fellow advocate, a friend who loves cats, or even treating yourself, you're sure to find something meaningful in our shop. Visit communitycatspodcast.com/shop-merch today to explore and start checking off your holiday gift list. That's communitycatspodcast.com/shop-merch because giving back is the best gift of all.
The other thing about TNR that I think some people overlook or don't want to acknowledge because it has funding ramifications, this isn't a one-off thing. You don't do it and say, that's it, we've neutered 3,000 cats, we can relax, it's done. Populations rebound, they come from somewhere. TNR and cat population management is a long-term thing. It's something that becomes part of your normal community activities. It becomes the societal norm. Another part of the jigsaw puzzle is veterinary clinics. They've got to have the capabilities to neuter early, neuter kittens in TNR programs, because we know that is most effective in stopping future births and future suffering, and to encourage owners to neuter at 4 months of age or before. If they don't know it, they're not going to know to do it. And then we move to the homing organizations, and that's all about working efficiently, making sure you don't end up full to the brim of cats and they all get stuck there because they get sick. It's about, again, being efficient, increasing the throughput by having fewer cats at any time and moving them through quickly because they don't get sick. People don't have too much choice. They pick the cat, they go, another one comes in. You see how complicated it is when you're describing it like that? You think, oh my God, my head hurts already. But that's just four of the stakeholders, you know, that's just four of them. But if you break it down and you create a jigsaw puzzle, doesn't matter how many pieces in your jigsaw puzzle, but like with any puzzle, they make much more sense when they're all put together.
And I mean, as I started out with my children, they had jigsaw puzzles and it had, you know, six pieces to it. And then as you grow and develop and your thought process, you get into more challenging puzzles. Not everybody has to think at the 1,000-piece level. We can stay focused at the 4 to 6 piece level, the smaller level, and just keep doing what you're doing with the understanding of what's going on sort of holistically. But there are a lot of different components to it. in that 1,000-piece system in my dream world, every public library would have a microchip scanner here in the States so that then somebody could just check out a microchip scanner and could scan the cat in the backyard and then return it to the library and someone else could use it and they wouldn't have to waste a veterinary appointment to bring it in to have the cat scanned, which is veterinary resources like gold here. And so we want to make sure that they're doing what they should be doing rather than taking the time to scan a cat. And, you know, libraries are a great public resource for that, or even a trap bank there too. Those kinds of things, taking those out of our homing organizations or our TNR groups and work more efficiently and put all of this within our ecosystem of cats. So Vicky, I'm going to ask you a very loaded question before we turn over to finding out more about the Battersea Cat Project. I wanted to ask you, if you had a magic wand and you could fix the cat overpopulation problem, what would you do? How would you focus your resources?
Well, of course, you've picked the question that keeps me up at night, haven't you? That is the question. And if this was kind of 4 a.m. and we both discovered in our relative worlds that we were both awake at the same time and we phoned up each other to have a chat, this would be the thing that would be going through my mind. So I go back to the idea that cats are there for no other reason but we put them there. We chose them as a companion animal. We love them. And as a result of our activities, not intentionally so, we have inadvertently allowed this problem to occur. So that means, and this is very unpalatable, that humans are the cause of the problem, but humans are also the solution. And if I had a magic bullet, it would be that every time I say to somebody, do you want to be part of the solution to your local overpopulation problem? They would rub their hands in glee and say, yes, of course I would. Where do I sign? What do I have to do? That's what we're up against. We're up against harnessing people. Every single person has an individual life story, individual life experiences that gets them to the place where they have very specific core beliefs and values and opinions. And you're dealing with such a vast variety of those. Somehow being able to appeal and resonate with all those different people for them to say, yeah, I want to be part of this. That would be wonderful in an ideal world. And what you said about library-based microchip scanners, that is part of your 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle. You know, you're absolutely right. Each one of my 4 pieces, and there are many more that form the key stakeholders, has its own 1,000-piece jigsaw made up of these little clever, straightforward initiatives that allow resources to be used as effectively as possible. I'd love everyone to be into jigsaw puzzles and see this as a jigsaw puzzle and be motivated to make their own 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle.
And then we see what it looks like. We can all share what our jigsaw puzzles are and what they look like. And I'll be like, wow, I didn't realize your jigsaw puzzle looked like that. I see it this way. You see it that way. And so isn't that interesting?
Exactly. And another part of that jigsaw puzzle is monitor what you've done, monitor the impact of what you've done. And that has its own 1,000 pieces so that you know all these resources you're using, the money you're spending is having the impact you want based on the goals you've set. You know, that's really important. That's another jigsaw piece.
Vicky, tell me a little bit about the Battersea Cat Project.
Yes. This is really exciting for us because Battersea Dogs and Cats Home have what's referred to as a global enabler fund, whereby you can apply for a grant. We were very fortunate to apply just over a year ago. And they're looking at people who are dealing at root cause level rather than symptom level. And we put forward a proposal to them to work with 5 pilot countries across the world to develop a way of working that allowed us to individualize the support that we could potentially give people. We're an educational charity, basically. We're all about courses and information, best practice, etc. And they gave us this grant. It's a 3-year grant, started last November. And our pilot countries are quite diverse. Some of them are very similar, but others are. The UK has got to be one of them. Makes sense. We've got in Europe, we've got Greece, Portugal, and Cyprus. And then we went out there and went for Australia. So currently, and this just goes with what we were talking about talking to your community, finding out what problems are, we're spending a year gathering insight from those countries. Because we're not going to tell them what they need. We don't know what they need. It would be wrong of us to suggest we even begin to know what they need. So we're just getting all the information. We're listening to them, all the different stakeholders. We have about 18 to 21 stakeholders mapped across each country. And we're also going to do a big citizen survey. And we hope next year to get all this information together and to publish it. Hoping that from getting this view of diverse countries and understanding the nuances and all the different things that influence how you manage cats could be potentially really important for other countries. So we're looking forward to publishing that next year. And from that, we will be able to establish what their needs are with regard to training and courses, learning pathways, and provide that and know that it's tailored and it won't be, well, that's not relevant to me. And of course, for sustainability, we're also planning to train individuals within the country to train their own communities. And then they can develop that as they see fit.
Wonderful. And I know for other countries outside of the United States, one of the things that I hear a lot is that getting equipment is very challenging. Appropriate traps is a huge barrier to entry. I get over and over again. And, you know, I say, oh, that's a simple solution, but it's not. It seems to be very challenging to get the right equipment. So even if folks are trained, they're just not getting access to the right equipment, then they have to figure things out. And sometimes when you try to figure things out, we make the problem a little bit worse and we're not able to utilize best practices. And so I would be interested to see what you run across in terms of some of the challenges and the barriers for all of these countries, because I think on a global platform for our community cats, it would be also wonderful to be able to say we have the same toolkit available to everybody, because we all need our TNR toolkit. And again, access to care is a role in that. Access to spay neuter is a role in that, as well as being able to have training, education, the proper equipment, the mindset. There's just, you know, a lot of different components. But even if we can get some clear definition of what's that baseline of what we must have to be able to move forward and even be able to provide that on a global basis would be just dramatically huge.
This is probably where we're going. And I think you nailed it, Stacey, when you said about we know what gold standard looks like, but then we have to realize that in most parts of the world, you're nowhere near. You're constantly making, okay, that's what I need, but logistically, I can't get it. I literally can't get it. What do I do instead? And that's where you have to be very creative. You have to be very sort of lateral thinking, you know, as to how you can make this happen, because giving up isn't an option. And it's amazing how incredibly resourceful people can be with very limited things, but even drugs, you know, drugs and equipment for the surgery. And in some countries, of course, vets are not the same as we would understand a sort of companion animal vet. They're trained for meat for food production. On that basis, you know, they may never have spayed a cat or castrated a cat.
Right. The tools that are available for them is very hard to figure out. And then there's the non-surgical sterilization component or question or birth control options that are out there, which are also challenging, but a possibility too. You know, I was just thinking another example would be to have like an indoor only cat campaign, but like have the community not have access to cat litter or have that mindset of using cat litter in the household. But yet we would be using our resources to try and convince everyone to have their cats be indoor only. And so when you're doing this analysis, you're probably going to be coming out with recommendations as to, based on your findings, these are the things we should be focusing on, versus in the States, we might do a campaign saying declawing is bad. Well, maybe veterinary practices don't even know what the clawing is in other countries. Therefore, it's just not something that we need to worry about in those areas.
Yeah. And it's hard, I know, for a lot of people in the United States to consider that being an indoor cat is not something that's embraced wholly in the rest of the world. For some people that think, oh, why would I keep my pet indoors? But for other people, that feels very comfortable because they then know their pet is safe. But as you say, access to cat litter in some places, that just isn't a thing, you know, and life isn't like that at all. Cats are much more sort of come and go, free roaming animals. It's incredibly complicated. I think if people just accept that it is complicated and they're kind to themselves and to other people and know that we're all doing the very best we can. And I just feel that by drilling down, having this insight piece, it might allow us to say, these are the basic things you need to consider. If you don't have this, you might want to think about this. If you have this, think about this, you know, see if we can produce something like that. I really don't know until we get that. I'm not making any assumptions about what we will find, but so far it's been very interesting.
Vicky, if folks are interested in finding out more about your organization, where would they do that?
We have an amazing website with loads of information. That's www.icatcare.org. And I would say I would love people just to email me, vicky.halls@icatcare.org, because I love to hear, every day is a school day for me. I love to hear about how people have identified challenges and faced challenges in their own environment and what they've achieved. I love to hear people's stories because it's empowering and makes me realize that I'm in a sector that's worth promoting.
Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Just the fact that I am really enjoying this. It's an absolute privilege because our careers have been fairly parallel, haven't they? You know, and every now and again we touch base, ships that pass. And it's just been lovely spending this time with you. And a big shout out to everybody, definitely in the US, who are doing great things. And yeah, we can always learn from each other.
We can always learn from each other. Everybody can learn from each other, that's for sure. Vicky, I want to thank you so much for agreeing to be a guest on my show, and I hope we'll have you on again in the future.
That would be lovely. Thank you, Stacey.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.